big part of our coaching is helping people understand how to communicate, how to talk from your feminine to the masculine. So we have to help them be like, what do you think about this? And how do I feel about this? And it's communicating with the right and left lobe correctly.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
18 Summers Tribe, we have a treat today. Megan and Nicole Michelina, sisters, doing important work, and we're excited to have them here with us today. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. We're excited to be here.
Yeah.
I wanted to know, how did you guys get into this? Because we saw your file and we're like, well, this is really interesting.
Let's first introduce what into this means.
Oh, that's true. You know, I'm already jumping ahead thinking people read show notes. And
are you self-proclaimed synchronicity sisters or someone gave you this title?
No, it's our self-proclaimed word. We created synchronicity on a whim, and then we just ran with the brand and we're sisters. So it just kind of honestly just created itself.
I love it. Synchronicity. It's perfect.
And explain to our community, what is the work you do? I mean, we know, but in your words, I don't want to steal the words out of your mouth.
Thank you for that.
We work androgynous semantic realignment with an emphasis in transactional analysis. And what that means is we believe that everybody is both masculine and feminine. And that's kind of a like touchy subject right now in the world today. But you don't have to choose. You just have to be aware of what energy you're in and be intentional about it. And we believe that's the future of mankind, is this awareness of masculine and feminine energy frequencies, what we're in, what we're choosing to embody in that moment, and then being able to communicate effectively, because all relationships are is communication. How you're feeling, how you're communicating that feeling, how you're making space for somebody else, and that ebbs and flows between masculine and feminine energy. So the more conscious we are and the more aware we are of the embodiment of masculine and feminine energy, which is essentially androgyny, we are able to be more fulfilled and more purposeful in our lives, in our service, and what we do. So that's kind of what we do. We coach. We do so many things. I mean, it's like you guys, it's kind of here, there, depending on what somebody needs and what's going on with that person, because everybody has unique needs and issues.
And we work in also the psychedelic world. So we help with a neuroplasticity shift using small doses of psilocybin, so magic mushrooms, to help people understand that they can change their brain, because you can change it without assistance. It just takes longer, especially when you have really dense neuroplasticity. So the older we get, especially after puberty, our neuroplasticity is pretty set in those neural networks. And so we're able to use a small dose of psychedelics along with the coaching to watch people literally change their lives within a very small, short period of time.
Yeah, I love that. We are definitely alternative medicine people, and it's been a big part of our life. We're not very mainstream, but I definitely want to dig deeper into that. So someone comes to you, like a couple like us, mm-hmm. and you're talking about male and female energy. Mm-hmm. How does that play into someone wanting to develop like a deeper marriage, let's say?
That's a great question.
It is a great question.
That would have to be my female energy, because Jamie always asks better questions than I did.
So. Oh my gosh. I'm like, you're so sexy right now.
Do we need to pause it?
Time out.
So that's actually a really great question, because when we first started, we're not working with a lot of couples. And now we have ton of couples, either pre-marriage and in marriages, that are coming to us like, well, this isn't working, that's not working. And they're, quite frankly, we're finding that a lot of people are embodying both. And so there's this fight for power, not fight for love. And that's what marriage is, right? You're fighting for love, but you have to have opposite attract, masculine and feminine. You have to be opposite. If you have both your friends, or if you're both in the same energy, your friends, there's no sexual attraction. And so it's helping individuals identify that. I think the first start is we identify what the individual's core energy is. So that has nothing to do with your genitalia. A man can absolutely have a feminine core and a woman can absolutely have a masculine core, and there's nothing wrong with it. But you cannot have two masculine cores together. That's friendship. You have to have a feminine with a masculine core in order for there to be polarization within the relationship. And a lot of times we are actually currently finding that a lot of relationships are founded off trauma bonds. So therefore, they're living out childhood trauma within their relationships. And we're actually having to go backwards, identifying those core-based traumas, bringing them to the forefront, and then allowing the couple to process it as a couple and step into a new relationship, not carrying the baggage of the past and of their childhood into their marriage.
But that creates a completely different landscape. If you come into the relationship based on this trauma
mask,
and then you're like, what do we do without our trauma? How do we relate to one another? And who am I without the trauma, right?
Absolutely. And so often we have found that we follow Dr. Eric Byrne's lineage. We do not believe a lot in the Freudian philosophies. Eric Byrne believes that there's the parent, adult, and child. We are scripted to our parents by the age of 3. Therefore, anything that our parents are unhealed, we take on. So then now we have our lives that we get to process all of what our parents have taught us. Therefore, we are bringing these into relationships, into work, into marriages, into our children, all of these things. So often people are very triggered when they hear, oh, well, I'm not trauma bonded. Well, most likely you are, because that's just how it works. It's being consciously aware of where the trauma lies. Therefore, you're able to work at it together. And it's actually quite a beautiful thing, because you get to work at it as a team. It's not just you having to do it. You have a partner that now supports you in this. You have someone that actually wants to be there. It's kind of like a built-in cheerleader, but you're both fighting then now for love, not for power.
I think that's amazing. So often that word power couple is used. And we always say, like, the last thing I'd ever want to be is a power couple, because then there's power struggle.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That title just didn't feel good. People would try to compliment. We're like, yeah, no,
it's not a compliment.
It kind of made us nervous.
Yeah, like, please stop.
Yeah. And I will tell you, we've done medicine ourselves. I mean, that's really
we've done a lot of work over the last 10 years.
Consider it to be, because it is so incredibly healing and moving, and the trajectory versus talk therapy or all sorts of things, but just truly moving the energy, or like you said, that neuroplasticity. And I really think it's changed the landscape of our entire life. I think there's blocks that each of us had that we would have never reached, the places in which we were meant to go individually and together, had we not worked on these things. And it's like, I don't know that any amount of therapy could have gotten us there without those specific pieces. I think it just really incredible. So it's definitely something that we hugely believe in. Now, there are a couple of terms that you used when you were first talking that I want to make certain that our listeners follow along with as well.
And me, because that went over my head. Jamie again, but I would miss him.
No, when we're talking about bringing in this like core masculine and this core energy, can you tell us a little bit about what each of those things show up as? We all have this vision of like, okay, masculine means male and feminine means female, but that's really not what it means.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, it's not what it means. It's actually like energy frequencies. And the issue with our society today that I see is the rejection of the feminine energy. We're taught from the time we're little to accomplish, do better, do more, even as women. And there's none of this soft kind of flowing energy in the majority of the population. And to do anything is masculine energy. To be is feminine energy. And what Carl Jung actually believed, you can even look, there's a really good book called Invisible Partner, where he talks about the enemas and the enema. So if you have a yin body, you have a yang soul. If you have a yang body, you have a yin soul. And the yin soul is the enema. The yang soul is the enemas. So yang is masculine, yin is feminine.
Yep.
So when we're talking about those energy frequencies, yin is femaleness. It's passive, vulnerable. It's the soft energy. And when you're thinking of a yin yang, it's the darker part of the yin yang. And then the yang is give, protect, cherish. It's the white part of the yin yang. But if you look at the little pieces, right, they each have a dot, that's the soul. So it's the embodiment of both. And then when you bring it together into a relationship, it's the polarization of the two. So we all have both, right? And a core energy is what we look for in an intimate relationship. So when we're talking about intimacy, we want a 50-50 relationship. We don't want someone to be a 10 and someone to be a zero. So the feminine part is being cherished. The masculine part is being respected. So of course, everybody wants to be both cherished and respected in the world today. But when we enter into a relationship, we have to give and take, right? So we need to be within an energy frequency. And so if I'm a feminine core and I feel best in an intimate relationship, when somebody is cherishing me, then I need to give respect in order to receive cherishing. Then I talk about it's usually like about 90% of the time. Of course, you're going to go into times in a relationship where we have to step into being respected and we cherish the masculine in the relationship. But the majority of the time, it's boundaries of like, okay, so the yang, the masculine core, is in feeling fulfilled in the relationship when he's making the plans, he's giving, he's protecting, he's cherishing the feminine, and the feminine is giving respectfully, right? So feminine gives abstractly. So it's a thank you. It's a gesture of like, I really appreciate when you do this. And the masculine gives in the material plane because masculine rules physical. So I always explain a man as bricks. They own the physical world. And the feminine rules the ethereal. So we're air. We're the feminine is what makes life fun, and everybody needs more joy and fun in their life. It started a while back. It's been probably hundreds of years that they've been destroying the feminine, but we're having the rise of the divine feminine in the spiritual community. You hear this a lot, and it is the art of just being. And men need to do this too. It's not go, 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 fight, fight, fight. The really hard part of a relationship is when women have children, because to mother is masculine. So to step into that role, to give to your children, to protect them, to nurture them, that's all masculine. So it's being able to step back into that softness, to be with your man, to like allow him to give to you, for your nervous system to relax when it's just the two of you, is it's a very hard shift to make. So we work with a lot of couples that when a woman has a baby and she steps into that masculine energy, which is a beautiful thing, it's her being very, very aware of like having time with just the two of them, right? You don't skip date night. You don't skip that intimate time where your nervous system is allowed to relax again and you can drop back into that feminine. And it's not all about the child. We have to make space for ourselves. We call it being self-centered.
Well, and I think another easy way to like break it down is that we all have a right and left lobe, right? So we have logic and creativity. So men, a lot of times, live in the logical mind, but they can absolutely jump over to the right side, which is their creativity, and vice versa. Women live a lot in the creative world, but we're forced into the logic world quite often, especially in business and business owners or working. And so it's being able to like ebb and flow between the two of them so that we know, am I in creativity or am I in logic? But when you think about most men, most right-handed men, they actually did. It was in 1976, right? The Nobel Prize.
Oh, about left-handed men.
Yeah. So right-handed men are logical. Like they think. They cannot think and feel simultaneously. Where left-handed men, like women, they can think and feel simultaneously. So like as feminine cores, we have to understand, this is when like a big part of our coaching is helping people understand how to communicate, how to talk from your feminine to the masculine. They're not in their emotions. So we have to help them be like, what do you think about this? And how do I feel about this? And it's communicating with the right and left lobe correctly.
It was 1981, Robert Sperry, he found the difference between the male brain and the female brain. And it actually happens at the 7th week of pregnancy when a man turns into a man, the androgen bath actually damages the brain and their corpus callosum becomes 45% smaller than a woman's. And so they can't think or feel simultaneously. They're either thinking or their feeling. And that's why women, or the feminine energy, the feminine brain, or a left-handed man is in charge of communication, because she actually drops him into his thinking or his feeling based on what frequency she's giving to him. So if you want to drop a man into his feelings, you say, I think, because you're logical. How do you feel? And if you're trying to get a man to fix things or think, you say, I feel, what do you think? And that allows a right-handed man's brain to actually relax and not go into like, oh my gosh, she's saying thinking, feeling, feeling, thinking, because our brains actually work different. We have more neurological connections between the two lobes, the feminine brain does, and men's goes more back and forth. So when we talk about men's brains being more compartmentalized than women's, that's what we're talking about, that study. And it's absolutely fascinating. I wrote a paper on it.
It's so fascinating.
And it should be talked about more.
And I can identify us.
Both of your eyes got so big, like it got bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. We're both like, whoa.
You guys said, like, I guess the word would be classic. Like, I'm the thinker and Jamie is creative feeler. I mean, she's
absolutely.
I'm the bricklayer type or salesman or whatever you want to say. But how would it work? And so I feel really lucky. How would it work then if we were both the thinker?
And I'm capable of thinking. You're capable.
It's absolutely not a natural fallback. We can both do it.
Yeah.
I'd like to think I have some real creative things, but my
absolutely.
The thinker. Jamie's fallback, her natural tendency is the creator. How would it work if we were both of the one as the natural fallback?
I think it doesn't work well.
It wouldn't work. There's no polarization. There would be no sexual attraction.
You're right. There's just not.
And I can think of times that we show up in an argument. And I can even point out, like, we were at that concert in Colorado, actually. And there was a line of people. It's just a random example. But there was a line of people that, like, kept getting in front of our front row seats. And, like, most of them, when the cops would come by and be like, hey, you can't stand here, they'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, no problem. But there was one woman that was, like, indignant about it. She was just like, but I'm standing here. And I looked at you and I said, that's the type of female that you struggle with. And it's because I've seen it in our own arguments. When I try to be, like, really press in, you're kind of like, oh, yeah, no, go fuck yourself. It's like, not really. But do you know?
Like, that's a little harsh.
No, but he puts you in your place. You submit to him. And that's what causes.
Because we're both in this, like, go through yourself minds, and not really. But I mean, I think of that as more like a fixed male. Yeah. Like, this is where I am. I'm standing firm here. I'm solid. I know what I'm doing. And, like, am I being giving?
No, you're not. I'm laughing because I was like, they gave a great example. Because Jane was like, well, how you feel? I'm like, the hell are you talking about? I'm thinking right now.
That's better. Sorry.
And that's the opportunity where she would come to you and be like, I don't want a problem solved right now. I need to vent. And she would make an appointment with you because then you stop thinking and trying to solve her problems and you're just there. Because your logical mind, your thinking male mind, and I can just tell, like, I can look at you guys and be like, well, you're a masculine core and you're a feminine core. Like, you guys have the polarization of it and you guys can ebb and flow between the two. Yes, absolutely. Jamie can be in her logical, like, thinking mind, but it's probably very exhausting for her nervous system to be there all the time. And for you, like, you can absolutely be creative. You guys choose to ebb and flow between the two, but 90% of the time, you're in your base core energies. One is thinking and one is creating.
But it's also fascinating because you guys are actually the rarest type of couple because you're both alphas, but one becomes beta when it's needed. You're that embodied and that conscious. So alpha, right? It's literally only 20% of the population. And there's only 10% that's in light. The other 10% are basically our politicians, but, you know, we won't get in.
Thank God we're not one of them.
I know.
But it's really fascinating when you meet alpha couples, because if they're not embodied, they never get married in the first place. But when they are embodied and then they're aware of the two energy frequencies, or one is more alpha than the other, and so the one submits, so it would be the feminine core in this case, that's so rare and that's so much consciousness. I love it. But the thing is, and we're actually going to start teaching a class on to alphas, because Nicole and I are both alphas too, and we didn't realize what that meant. Because the lady that you were talking about at the concert, she's what is called ego dystonic. So it's a Carl Jung concept, and it means she's masculine on the outside, feminine on the inside. So she has not become an embodied alpha. She is pushing so much masculine energy forward that she has actually cracked. Like, there's not the embodiment of both. And we're seeing this a lot in our culture right now. When you don't have the understanding of both, this is when you get toxic masculinity, toxic, and it can exist in women. And you get this really angry, bitter, like, rough energy. And I'm like, oh, how interesting. This hateful, dark energy comes from your childhood, and it's actually because your feminine was never nurtured. And the opposite is true of men. So if we look at, like, alpha men, like Mick Jagger is a really good example of that, right? He's feminine on the outside, masculine on the inside. He's actually flipped. He's ego dystonic. And it's really fascinating, right? Because when you have an alpha child, if it's not nurtured, and they're the most creative, brilliant people on the planet, But if they are not nurtured correctly, they become ego dystonic and not alphas. Alphas are the people that embody both. They're self-aware. They realize what energy they're in. They allow other alphas to be around them. It's not a fight to the death if you have two alphas like it is in nature, because we have choice. But unconscious alphas or the ego dystonic are what causes a lot of issues in our society because they're not aware. And we work with a ton of alphas. And that's why we're going to teach a class on this, because they're the most broken human beings on the face of the earth, because they're really fine. They'll go through life. Like, they're either, like, for women, they're the CEO, CFOs. For men, they're the top of the creative ladder, right? Because it's the opposite energy frequency that they're embodying. And what they don't realize is when they try to get into long-term relationships, because alphas want to be, for males, they want to be masculine cores. And for females, they want to be feminine cores, but they're so confused because they have to completely shift. It's like shape-shifting into the opposite, and they don't know how to do it in a relationship. So they feel unfulfilled. And so for alpha women, they usually end up the mistress and they never get married. And for the men, they marry a beta female, which is fine, but they never feel fulfilled. And they usually end up cheating and having a lot of mistresses. And the mistress is usually the alpha female because it's the woman that challenges him the most. So we're trying to get people to realize the consciousness around this, because I face-planted enough in relationships to realize, like, oh, right, I get in a competition with the guy I'm dating because I'm alpha and I think I know better and can do it better. And the thing is, it's like, that's a fight for power, not for love. It doesn't matter if I think that. Just, I wasn't asked. Like, if he wants my help, he'll ask me. And that's the being invited. That's important for both sides. It's not a competition. It's about love. It's like, okay, I am acquiescing to you because I love you. I'm not trying to get you to do things my way because I'm on an ego trip, is essentially what.
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge breakthrough. And I think something to backtrack on that you said, which I think is huger, that I don't want to slip by everyone listening, is you said it goes back to the childhood. Jamie and I realize this, and I'm sure with the work you guys have done, if we got in like an argument, somehow, I think from all the work we did, we were able to start saying, wow, this argument isn't really between us. And that was a huge aha. And at first that sounded like, you know, me trying to be my old North Jersey. What is this woo-woo shit? That doesn't even make sense. I mean, and it's like, wow, this makes perfect sense. I know exactly what it's talking about, exactly who this is between.
Now it does. Right?
Now it does. Yeah. But at first it was like, it didn't make any sense. But now even for both of us, we can almost politely say, well, hold on, this doesn't really feel like it's between us. Mm-hmm. And that is still I think we've made a long progress in, but other people, how do they start to work on that? Because this is a real thing, mm-hmm. a very real thing. And I think it's literally a game stopper. At a minimum, it's a containment on people fulfilling their lives. I mean, how can they really address that childhood thing that continues to play out their arguments, their breakdowns, their dysfunctional relationships?
Well, I think the first thing is becoming aware that it's actually there. Mm-hmm. Because I think so many people run around, and quite frankly, like, I know this is going to trigger a lot of people, but this world is ran by narcissists. Everyone wants to be respected and cherished. Absolutely. And they have no freaking idea what's happening. And I was totally one of them. Like, I was totally a narcissist, like, especially in my past career. Like, I was like, you're going to respect me and you're going to cherish me and you're going to give me all these things because I am amazing. No, sit down. That's your ego and check yourself. But that's how everyone in the world is running around. Majority of people are running around without even any self-awareness that they're doing anything wrong, because social media tells them that they're right. And all of the therapists and all of the money they're pumping into pharmaceuticals are also telling them that they're right and that it's everyone else's problem, and they have succumbed to victimhood. And yeah. So I think the first step of even beginning this journey is to realize that every single one of us have it. It's a thing, because yeah. Our parents weren't perfect. Neither one of them, no matter what your background was, it wasn't perfect. So somewhere along the line, genetically, or even just in your childhood home, you were gifted trauma. Like, you're welcome. It's a part of it. And if you don't think so, then I don't know, fire your therapist and like find something new to read. But quite frankly, it's surrendering into being like, I want to be a better human being and to do better. And I have pieces of me that are not perfect that I want to heal and look at. And it's vulnerability with yourself, I think, is the first biggest part.
Yeah, I know there's so much going on right now in the world, but I get so excited about we're at the precipice of such an amazing awakening within humanity. And there's so much potential. And with plant medicine and the consciousness coming back to a place that I believed like ancient Egypt was in, where men and women were equals and they moved in and out of masculine and feminine energy, it's going to be so amazing to watch. But it's framing with plant medicine, because plant medicine makes you aware. Self-awareness is super important. If you're self-aware and you're open and you get curious about why you're triggered, like most things are a projection, like all of these things, and you take a step back and you go, okay, where is my place in this? And okay, this person is being mean or doing this or doing that. Well, maybe I'm their gift or the answer to their prayers, and that they didn't intentionally hurt me. This is the projection of their own pain and suffering. And to realize how freeing it is that it's never about us. It's never about us. When you're having issues and you're projecting onto somebody else, that is you. But somebody else coming at you or doing anything, that's on them. And to be curious and open. And that's why we work with plant medicine and with framing in this consciousness, because they go so beautifully together. And you guys have worked in plant medicine too, and it changes everything so quickly. Like you step in and you're just like, oh, wow. I had no idea.
And I've never heard such a simple definition, but you're basically saying your experiences with plant medicine, which I can agree with, it gives the ability for self-awareness.
Yes.
Sometimes that might not come out, which is huge. It might have been Viktor Frankl or Stephen Covey said, it was like the biggest thing that separates us from animals. We're not better, but we've developed, the higher ones have developed self-awareness.
Yes.
Where it's tougher, for as much as we love our dogs, they don't have that innate ability that we've been gifted with if we use it.
Right. Well, and ideally plant medicine, like I was saying earlier, a lot of it is ego-driven. Because we're normally in a trauma response, or we're being triggered, or something is happening, so we're emotionally engaging. That's our ego in the way, because our ego is made and built in. It's like a hardware system, software that has been downloaded into us to protect us. So what are we going to do? We're going to, obviously, that's the ego saying, oh, well, it's their fault. They did it, blah, 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 blah. Until you have awareness of your ego and overriding it and saying, oh, wait, I'm a part of this. I am responsible for me. I can take full responsibility. I can tell my ego. I can understand my ego and myself. I can see the separation. And that's the beautiful thing about plant medicine is that it calms the ego down. So you're able to actually decipher which is coming to the front. And you're able to create this beautiful balance between, okay, I do need my ego sometimes. Oh, but like I'm in an ego rage. Now I need to be in like myself, and I need to step back and I need to look at this, and I need to take credibility, not my ego. Right. And so it's this ebb and flow. And if anybody listening has had a rude awakening or a face plant with their ego during plant medicine, they talk about this ego death. It's not really your ego dying. It's you becoming aware of what your ego looks like. Because so often we don't actually know what our ego looks like, because it lives in the subconscious world of our minds. It wants to protect us. And when we get
the same arguments, right?
And it's
when
like
having the same argument, it's because your ego is just like,
right.
Hey, I think we should bring this up again. That was fun. And then it reinforces your fears, your insecurities, and just shows you again and again and again, right? See, you were right. He's X, Y, and Z, or that person really doesn't like you, or whatever it is that our ego is trying to just like continue to keep us in that same pattern of, like you keep just saying, it's incredibly freeing to get on the other side of that. It's scary though. Change is scary. Absolutely. Ego is like,
I think something we have to recognize too, and just the avenue we're talking about, this is still a very taboo subject. I'd love to get you guys' opinion. I'm still baffled, and this may offend some people, that we turn to what we consider quote unquote good Samaritans who offer some good things, I believe, but they've also been on the other side of billions and billions and billions of dollars of neglectful slander and lawsuit. I mean, it's just what it is. And I've learned so much over the last 5 years of my life that sometimes there's going to be campaigns about something that's best for you. And I'm not saying this is best. This is a choice that four of us have made, and I'm not telling anyone listening to this to follow our way, but can you guys just take a minute to talk about just efficacy? Because I think efficacy is a big word out there, and some of the people that are screaming anti-efficacy have a really bad track record.
So are you talking pharmaceuticals?
Hell yes.
Okay, I'm like, can we just say the word?
We are. I think it was very obvious. Most of our listeners who listen to our shows, look, I'm not an absolute guy. I believe there are some great things that super helps me, family members, the different things. I donated a kidney to my dad. I couldn't have done that with certain things. Then I've watched some things that I personally, for a very short time, tried medicine for my ADD. It made me suicidal for 3 weeks. And it was very hard. And so we look at these things. So I don't like to see things wrongly accused. So I'd like to just ask a short bit on efficacy of what we're talking about. Because people go, oh my God, it's 1960s communism takeover, like all this crap. I was just like, what the hell are you talking about? That wasn't my experience. I actually learned that I had some trauma I had to work through. But can you guys talk a little on efficacy?
I know she's cooking over here, but I will say the 1960s and 1970s, the war on drugs, was all political. And we have the evidence backing that. And I know that triggers a lot of people when I say it, because we've gotten massive backlash on previous podcasts, but it was a political campaign. Nixon was huge on the war on drugs because he wanted to win, and they flipped it. They knew the power of these drugs. And I don't even like to call them drugs. They're medicine. They help people change their lives. We've personally watched people completely transform that once were suicidal, like they had no hope until they found plant medicine. But they knew, and it was completely ran. It was a great marketing campaign, and we're now still seeing the aftermath of it. But the third wave is here, and I think our generation is the one that's parents are like, oh my God, those are drugs, don't do it. And we're like, well, but are they? Because there's a lot of things backing this now that's saying this was all pushed politically, and now it's pushing for us to even open more doors with asking and questioning pharmaceuticals. So I think it's actually was a beautiful gift from the 60s and 70s, because now these next generations are questioning efficacy. Like, where are you guys coming from? And is this actually true? Or are you guys just pushing it for big money?
Well, I'll just flat out say it. I used to be a private flight attendant. I flew the CEOs and CFOs, CXO team of Pfizer. None of them were vaccinated. Neither were their children.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
And there's efficacy right there.
I felt offended from different things that have helped our family, from what we're talking about to the vitamin things, where you cannot group an opiate in with the vitamin or a medicinal plant. And I'm saying that is so wrong. Opiates, I'm against. I've watched friends destroy themselves with heroin, cocaine, meth. This is a very clear drug segment. And where did it come from? We all know where it came from. And it sure wasn't the hippies in the 60s. It came from guys who were making a lot of money, like you just named. And I do think it's important for parents to understand, have this, and this might be a controversial episode we're having, but know the difference between what we're talking about. Opiates as drugs are bad. Are we talking about opiates? Or are we talking about something else? Like, because now we're even seeing vitamins being pushed into almost next to an opiate.
Mm-hmm.
But, so it's crazy, but I appreciate your guys' honesty on that. And it's not something a lot of people want to talk about. And I'll say, I think pharmaceutical companies have produced some good things that can be helpful. I think that no one has a perfect track record. And sometimes we have to admit, as we just said, there's a lot of ego in saying, hey, this was wrong. And we probably won't ever get it. But I think the rest of us just have to have understanding that.
Well, and there's a lot of tools out there now. I mean, for me personally, my parents, they struggled. I was a hyper child. Like, I am crazy. And I still have a super hyper crazy, busy, creative mind. But it wasn't until the last like 4 years when I found human design and realized I'm a manifesting generator. I am creative energy. Like, that is literally when it breaks down to it. And there's generators, there's reflectors, projectors, there's five of them. That has given more individuals that I personally know and we have coached more understanding of themselves than any pharmaceutical ever would. Generators are pure power life force. They go, 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 go. Usually they succumb to addiction and or deemed ADHD or ADD because they're like the Energizer bunnies, but they're made to produce. You give them more sports. You give them creative outlets. You don't drug them. You find out what your child is and you help them. You give them tools. And the pharmaceutical companies just want to be like, oh no, teachers are like, I can't handle your child. Your child's out of control in my class. We need to give them Ritalin. Well, no, maybe that's not the right school. Maybe that's not the right teacher. There's so many resources out there now to help children and parents be more conscious of how their children are being raised now, especially, you know, like plant medicine and stuff. I'm not saying like, go give your child mushrooms right off the bat, but I think we're coming to the point where there might be childhood traumas that do happen within the household, like a family member dying suddenly. I know Megan and I, we had a very tragic loss at a very young age that imprinted on us. And like, we have now had to work through a lot of that in our adultness. Had we had plant medicine then, maybe it would have actually helped us process that as children. With parenting, we don't have a lot of research. And quite frankly, who knows if there's even going to be, and that's up to every parent's choice. But there's a lot of tools out there outside of just running to the doctor and listening to them, because they don't always know.
When I would look at the research, one of my mentor, Dr. Berg, because I'm a holistic nutritionist under him, and he released a thing a couple months ago, actually it was probably like 6 months ago now, but on antidepressants. Yeah. And he just said, if you guys read this, what's so fascinating is that there was no proof that they do anything. 90% of serotonin is made in your stomach. And they're sitting there saying that this all does this in the brain. Well, the blood-brain barrier, like he released this entire thing and went into detail. And I can even give you guys the video for the show notes if you wish to watch the video by Dr. Eric Berg. He's like the godfather of keto, but he's brilliant. He solves so many dis-ease with food and with mental, where you're at mentally and things like that. And I was so floored when I watched that video by him, but he isn't afraid to say the obvious. And I really appreciate about him for that, because he's a doctor looking at things saying, this research doesn't make any sense. And they're selling this to how many billions of people every year, claiming that it does something that there's no proof that it does. And that's in the research. So if people, I empower you to read the research, read that stuff before you're giving it to your children or taking it yourself, because I'm more and more shocked daily by the stuff coming out about those types of things, and just kind of hurt that I feel like we've been very, very lied to and misled when it's essentially a placebo that damages your liver.
Well, and also look back two decades. We didn't have all of this, but we also didn't have GMOs. We didn't have all of this changed fast food. We didn't have all of this refined sugar. We had it, but it was different.
It wasn't as prevalent.
Right. And now we're seeing children with all of these like autism. I mean, I feel like everyone's on the spectrum now. It's like constant. These kids are living on screens, like looking at actual behaviors within the household of what are you eating and what are you consuming, and going from there to be able to maybe potentially identify that maybe it's within the household. So changing those lifestyles instead of going and running to a little yellow bottle that you get to fill up every month.
I want to stick close to kids for a minute, because there's a couple of things that we've talked about involving children. Now, this is an open conversation that we've had in our house for years. We've got children ranging from almost 2 to almost 20, and we have very open communication with our two oldest about the things in which we've done, the experiences we've had, the ahas, the breakthroughs, all of these changes, and we openly communicate. And as you said, everyone's experienced trauma and it's all different in different ways. And however, our two oldest, unfortunately, have had more than the rest of us, but who knows as life carries on, but they have had experiences in youth that we're very grateful to be familiar with this medicine, because they have an opportunity at a younger age, just as you were saying, to break through those challenges and those traumas. And both of them have an open understanding. So when they turn 18 or however that may look for them, when they are ready or they want to approach the conversation, we can do that. They've already read books on it, things in which we've shared with them, they've listened to podcasts. And it is a conversation that we have in our house in which they know the possibilities. It's not something that we do in the quiet and are like, oh, but that's bad. It's really an open conversation, but it's a conversation. It's not a, oh no, you must take this or pharmaceuticals are bad. It's just an open conversation. But I wanted to really revisit something that you talked about earlier about narcissists. There's so much run by narcissists now. And I really feel like parents today are breeding narcissists.
Yes.
And so while I have you here and we're discussing all of these different dynamics, what is your thought on this, like creating self-awareness in our children or how to combat some of this stuff before it becomes an issue that ego settles in, I guess?
That's a great question. So this is how you create a non-narcissist. Okay. So as a parent, we have been taught I won't speak for you, but I'm guessing that you were raised like we were. You were raised in a dictatorship or a tyrant, right? It's like, you do this because I say so. There was no negotiating at all.
No choice.
And that creates a child that's either a doormat, that's like, okay, you know, whatever you want, that succumbs to peer pressure as a teenager, or you create a bully and somebody that's self-centered and a narcissist and is just a kill or be killed. And this is why kids are shooting up things. This is why we're seeing suicide. This is why we're seeing all of this suffering. And it comes from the parents being dictators, because you can start to negotiate with her. When a male is 11, just because of the way the brain works, you start to negotiate with the child. And this is how you allow a child to take up space, but you teach them that it's a partnership and there is no such thing as free. There is a negotiation. So it's like, okay, well, I want to go to this party. The parent doesn't want them to go, but the teenager wants to go. You say, okay, great. You have every right to want to go to this party, but if you go to the party, then you're not allowed to drive the car the rest of the week. So you make a choice. You can go or you can continue to drive your car. So you're giving them choice. You're saying, I hear you. I understand you. I don't want you to go. But if you still want to go, here's the consequence to that action. And it becomes a negotiation, right? That doesn't mean that the parent is like, boom, done. The child can come back and say, okay, well, what if I go for an hour? Whatever. You're teaching the child negotiation skills and that I don't rule you or own you. I am the vessel in which you came through, and I'm here to guide you and tell you that there's consequences to your actions, and I don't want you to do this, right? Or the parent can say, hey, I want you to do such and such chore, and then you can go for this amount of time, but I want you to be home. There's boundaries around it, but you're creating a child that's allowed to take up space, that's self-centered. These are my wants, needs, and desires. How do you feel, or what do you think about them? And the other issue is that we also, women, right? The feminine, and even in men, it needs to be nurtured, right? How do you feel about your day? Not like, what did you accomplish? What grades did you get? Oh, you're a failure. It's like, oh, no, wait, what did you fail at? How can we do better? And how do you feel about your day? And you ask male or female. If it's a feminine core, it's more important to ask her how she feels. But for men, it's like, let them go explore. As a mom, it's pretty obvious if somebody is a feminine core as a parent. So kind of be aware of that as parents. Well, I'm not a parent, but you know your children. So if it's a masculine core and you're aware of that, as a mother, remember that you're the goal and that the father is the example. So start to move into respecting him and him cherishing you. So start to ask him what he thinks. Start to allow him to have more freedom. So he's stepping into that give, protect, or cherish. You're nurturing his masculine energy and also nurturing the feminine in you. So it starts to transition. We don't put enough emphasis on this. It's really hard, because that's what's creating narcissists in our society, is dictatorship and tyranny in the household. Nobody's allowed to take up space but the parents, and they feel so powerless in their day-to-day life by their bosses, and they're this and they're that. They come home and they beat up their spouse with words or their child or whatever to gain that power back. And this is the dynamic in the households nowadays, and it's the family that we grew up in. And having to come to terms with that was really difficult. And also going back to the ego, dystonic, and the alpha, if you have a strong personality, you are more capable of being narcissistic because you're so dynamic. You are so intelligent and so creative that watch yourself, because, and I know this from both of us being alphas and we own a company together, I have to be very aware, because there can only be one alpha in the room at a time. So when I need to take the back seat, I take the back seat. When I need to step forward, I step forward. And you have to be aware when you're highly intelligent and highly creative, because you're probably an alpha, and you need to be more aware. And it's more important for you to be self-aware than a beta, because you're plowing over people to feel that respect and that cherish. And you need to kind of take a step back, breathe, and start to choose between, okay, do I need to be respected right now, or do I need to be cherished? Am I the alpha or the beta in this situation right now? Because you have more likelihood of being a narcissist. And again, that's a choice. And some people don't have that choice. So be grateful that you're listening to a podcast like this, where if you're being triggered, you're probably an alpha, and just look at it. It's actually a beautiful thing, and start to like develop those skills of like
where am I at and where do I need to be in order to get what I want or make that other person feel good about themselves? Because you never want to walk away from a situation making somebody feel like less than when you first came into the situation.
Good point.
Or at least that's my philosophy.
Great. Like the little bit that I just took away from that, and tell me if I'm wrong, I'm thinking, offer my boys respect, offer my daughters cherish. We're going to make it so basic, like, dad, go like cherish those girls and I'm respect those boys. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, that masculine. Like,
that's what we were saying on our last podcast. I was saying for my sons, I want to raise strong men who care.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that gives the balance, but that's kind of what I was like. I think, you know, but you have to have self-awareness to be like, okay, this feels balanced. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm actually being tyrannical right now because we can all.
Yes. Absolutely. For the boys, the woman's the important parent. How you act is who they will marry. And for the women, the male, the father is the important parent because how you act is who she will marry. So if you cherish her, ask her how she feels and nurture her, she will not have or put herself in situations where her body and mind are compromised.
Yeah,
and
I like
for
that.
A man, you are the example. And if you respect him, he will respect women and he will never put a woman in a compromising position or himself. And it's super important because we have so many parents that come to us and say, oh, well, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, you're not fooling your children. Children read energy and they know everything and you are the example. So what you're doing in your life, even if you think you are hiding things, you are not, because our parents were the king and queen of like,
nothing's happening. It's rainbows and butterflies and everything's like, is beautiful.
We started dating and everything. I'm like, why is this such a train wreck?
Well, and I think it's important to also emphasize, like, so many people, and I'm sure you guys have had this, that are like, oh, I married my dad. Yeah, you did. Like, he was the example. Like, that's how it works. Because that's energetically, I know, woo-woo-ish, but that is what imprints on us. So you see it, and that goes to the trauma, back to the trauma bonding. You married your father. You married your mother. Like, that's what happens, and you can see it in real time.
You marry the unhealed part of yourself.
Yeah, which was definitely a scare for both of us in younger years, but nothing against our folks, but I didn't marry my mom, and Jamie didn't marry her dad.
Congratulations.
We called in the opposite because love and respect his mom, but I'm like,
she's
super different and same. And so it's really neat that it's like, oh, okay, I can rest.
Because we've heard this before, like, wow, we didn't.
But they stood up in the room.
Younger years. Yeah. We made terrible mistakes with relationships, but we're happy where we are.
Where can our listeners learn more? Follow you,
engage with you. So our Instagram is Synchronicity_sisters. Megan has currently taken it on. She is doing 1-minute videos about all of the content we cover, we coach on, and what we pretty much believe in. And we also have a podcast, Synchronicity_podcast on Instagram. That is our podcast. We only post on there like things and people that are up and coming. We have a website, www.synchronicity222.com. There will be new courses hopefully being launched by September 15th for individuals that are looking for any more information. And we only respond. So if you guys have any questions on either one of our Instagrams, we run it. We don't have any AI or assistants that are currently running that. So it's directly Megan or I that you will be communicating with.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for all of your wisdom and sharing today. And this was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.